Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 9th, 2011, and you're listening to the best poker cast on the planet, back on solid ground. I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long. Speak for yourself, man. I'm working from the Key West room, as we call it here at Stately Long Manor, so I can watch my cats jump in the pool and not drown. So if I have to get up abruptly, it's because they've decided they're trying to swim. So I don't know how stable ground I'm on, but I'm glad you are.
Well, you know, when I was younger, I had a girl who wasn't so stable. She was my first girlfriend. And, you know...
Well, right here, I mean, any girl that would be your girlfriend, stable would not be the adjective I would immediately...
Yeah, but we're talking like, you know, 13 or 14 or something. You know, you don't know what
yeah,
I was like
even
back
worse.
Then.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, she got a little unstable for me, and, you know, I didn't have a car, and she was one town over, and it was just proven to be a hassle. So I broke up with her, and, you know, I went on my merry way. So, like, 6 months later, I get a phone call, and it's like her best friend. And her best friend says, "Hey, Chris, how's it going?" I'm like, good. Why are you calling me?" She's like, "Well, you know, I just want to let you know that, you know, Janine is willing to take you back." And I'm like, what are you talking about?" She goes, "Well, she's willing to take you back. She's willing to be your girlfriend again." And I said, "I broke up with her. What do you mean she's willing to take me back? It would be
that's
the other way around.
Good negotiating, man.
I'm like, what are you kidding me? You're willing to take me back." Now, the reason why I've brought this up is because on the ship, I forgot to bring this up on our impromptu quick recording when we were there. I was in a hand in a no-limit hold'em, and I had a huge bluff against somebody. I actually made like a mental note that I was going to try to bluff more on the ship and start getting better at bluffing. So I made a huge bluff with this guy, and the guy was staring me down for the longest time. And finally, when he's getting ready to fold, he's like, "I'll tell you what I had if you tell me what you had."
Oh, I love that.
And I basically said, "I don't give a damn what you had," although I didn't say damn. "And why would I care what you have?" And it just reminded me of what the girl did. She's like, "Yeah, I'm willing to take you back." I'm like, "No, I don't need to know what this guy has. I won the hand. Why do I care what you had?" And it was just this sort of manipulative way to try to get me to tell him what I... And I'm like, "No, your information is not important to me. I know I can bluff you." You know, I mean, it was this weird thing. And that was when Lee was standing right behind him when I said it, and he started cracking up. And I just... Did you ever come across that where a guy's like, "Yeah, tell me what you got, and I'll tell you what I had," even though it makes no difference to you?
I haven't, but... this is what I'm talking about. It's very effective psychology, isn't it?
I guess. I didn't tell him, though.
I mean, because it's such an off-putting comment. You know, you're not expecting it. And then, so, you know, when people offer you this stuff, and it sounds like a deal, you know, like, "Hey, you know, just in case, you could take me back." You know, like, in your mind, it's like, "All right, there's a deal here. I just got to figure out how good it is." And then when you realize, "Hey, it's not a deal at all," it's probably too late sometimes. And that's the same thing. You know, "Hey, okay, sure. All right, I'll tell you what I am." And they're like, "Don't."
Well, that falls along the lines of the Looney Tunes, you know, reversal psychology thing. Where it's like, "Yes, you did. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. No, I didn't. No, you didn't. Yes, I did." And then you get them to convince, you know, that's the same kind of thing there. I don't think I'm falling for that. I'm not friggin' Elmer Fudd, you know. I was pretty proud of the way I actually came back pretty quickly and was like, "I don't give a damn what you have. What do I care?" Everybody laughed at the table. So that was kind of cool. But yeah, I just never had somebody actually try to do that. Like, it was important what he held. I didn't care what he held. I had a lot of fun on that table. That was a scary table, though. That was all the 2-5 guys coming over to the 1-3 table and looking to you know, clean up. So you had to be pretty careful where you stepped.
Yeah, see, I'm thinking that guy and your ex-girlfriend have spent some times at the used car lot as well, too. Because that's where you get that stuff. You're like, yeah, you know what? Yeah, test drove it. I like it. It's not bad. I don't think I want it. You don't want it? No, I'm going to keep looking around. And hey. Do you have a credit card? Yeah, I do have a credit card. Well, you could put down a deposit on it. That way you don't lose it if you look around and can't find anything. Okay.
Little known fact.
Talk to you, and you get a deposit.
The guy I bluffed is actually dating my first girlfriend now, so it's pretty interesting.
Oh, excellent. So
true story.
Like Bonnie and Clyde.
They're working together to try to get some info for me.
Well, we had a blast on the cruise, as people probably noticed in our abbreviated yet action-packed episode from last week.
Yes.
With the Great Lee Childs. And then, of course, as soon as the recorders are off, you're like, dope! Forgot a couple of things. And then, of course, we had a whole night left to play.
Yeah.
After that. So a couple other things came. So, we're still basking in the glow of the fun of the cruise. And a couple more tidbits to share that do not involve any of my ex-girlfriends or players who bluff me. But... Friday night, we got this particular itinerary. We always seem to get sit and goes going.
Yeah.
Not always, but this one, people for whatever reason like to play sit and goes. And I was doing terribly, as we mentioned on last week's show. But the last night, we, I mentioned casually to one of our system managers, I'm like, we have these listeners that write into the show that are online players. And when Black Friday came, they had to, get a map in their GPS unit and figure out where they could play live. And they went there, and they're like, yo, WTF, where are the double or nothing sitting goes? And we had to explain to them, obviously, that, it just doesn't make sense for the for poker rooms to do it. But I'm like, hey, we're on a cruise, maybe this is an opportunity to try something fun and get some people together and play a double or nothing sit and go. And he's like, you know what, I think I like that. The next thing I know, we ran like seven of them, it seemed like.
Wow.
And then we had people going, hey, come on, I don't want to play Double or Nothing anymore.
Right.
But they had fun. They did Double or Nothing. And, I kind of changed my mind a little bit on whether these are good for brick-and-mortar rooms. I'm not saying they're great, but, with the Double or Nothing sit-and-go, it's over much more quickly than a normal sit-and-go.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, from a brick-and-mortar standpoint, actually, it's not as bad as I thought it was. Now, I think what we found, though, is that, to really profit in these things, you got to be multi-tabling these things.
Yes.
You got to be doing a bunch of them at a time. That's what online players like. It's not that they like playing double or nothing. It's just they know that they can get a lot in and do well, and, you can't do that in a live setting. So, it might have a few legs in the brick-and-mortar rule. World. I don't know whether it's going to have a lot of legs in the brick-and-mortar player world. That makes sense.
Do you think you can multi-table by having two different colored decks going at once at the same table?
I'm sure Gambit can introduce that in his home.
Yes. Yep. And then two different sets of chips so you know which ones you're playing, which pots, and you can figure it out. Get a bigger table. Get one of those stud tables like at Caesars Atlantic City.
Right.
You get enough room for chips and cards and get an extra dealer sitting there. You could deal two at once. I'm pretty sure somebody could do it.
And then, of course, we're playing these, and the big problem with the cruise ships sometimes is you get a limited player base, so you got to keep people in the room if you want. So, when these sit-and-goes break up, usually we have some people that that go out first, like me. They just hang out and wait for the next one to go. And so we're trying to get them in. And you got to be creative every once in a while, right?
Right.
Eventually people are like, no, I think I'm going to go to bed. No, don't go to bed. No one goes to bed on a cruise ship. Stay and play. What do you want to play? And here's the thing. Black Friday, all the things that crushed my hopes and dreams from Black Friday. One of them is I never got to play an all-in or fold tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever get one to play one of those online?
Well, I played an all-in full cash game once.
Oh, interesting.
It was like you had to take it to the end, cap it, and a limit all-in or full limit game once. But I never played a tournament one, though.
Oh, my gosh. That's even more mind-boggling than the all-in or full sit-and-go. So I never get to play one of those, right?
Right.
And I wanted to try it. It's a novelty, I admit. This is not – you're not going to see Phil Ivey and Doyle Brunson arguing to get an all-in or full tournament added to the World Series schedule next year. But it seemed like to me it would be an interesting experiment. And you know how we are on the show. We promote the heck out of mixed games and stuff because it works at different muscles. And I just think the fact that I had to think about whether I want to go all in or fold on every single hand can only help me become a better player, even if I lose all my money in this tournament, right?
Yeah.
That's my thinking. Yeah. And then I've seen it actually in the brick and mortar. I think they do this out in Commerce or somewhere out in L.A., I think.
Yeah. I think the bike had one, too.
Oh, it could be a bike,
As part of the Legends or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, things are winding down. I'm like, hey, who wants to play an all or a fold? And I had to go, oh, yeah, sure. And then a couple of people, so we ended up making it work, designing the whole thing so everybody was happy. And we did it. And I had a blast. The most fun I had losing money in a while. Because obviously I didn't win. But, you know, it really did. I mean, all this time I was talking to people, trying to get them to play the tournament, I never sat down and thought about what my strategy would be. So it was brand new, and I'm looking at the cards. I'm like, oh, my God, I got to go in all in or fold here. What do I want to do?
Yeah. Did you institute sort of the short stack strategy when you played it? Were you like, this is what I would do if I had a short stack go all in, this is the hand I would go all in, or did you really get selective?
Well, I mean, here's the thing that I think was really interesting about it, and I'm not trying to start a movement of these, but I would love to play more now. So, you know, 5, 12, 30 years from now when we get online poker back in this country, I'll be ready to do it. But, it's one of these things where it's not so much you, obviously there's some poker skill involved, but it's also timing and situational.
Yeah.
You know, if you figure out who are the gamblers and who aren't the gamblers in these things, and by nature, I would think if you're playing an all-in or fold, you're a gambler.
Right.
Anyhow.
Right.
But some of them have more gamble in them than others. So, you know, if you've watched a couple laps and you see some people fold every single hand, then why not, do all in with, queen seven up, you know, the computer hand or something like that. I don't think this is a tournament where you want to bluff. There's no reason to bluff in this tournament, really.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, all you're going to do is pick up the blinds and you're putting your whole stack at risk, so you don't want to do that. But, so I think there's some of that stuff. And then also, you know, if you've got two or three of you, I mean, what does that mean for you? If you call with, like, say, a suited connector and get lucky, then you're probably going to win the tournament because you got, you know, a gajillion chips.
Yeah.
Or do you let it play out and hope obviously there's no split pot and a bunch of people get knocked out and you move that much closer to the money, though at a chip disadvantage. So there's a lot to think about, I think.
What a weird situation.
Yeah, I think in the end I ended up pushing almost with any ace. And obviously any pocket pair I think is a good push. Other than that though, I didn't really formulate a strategy yet. I mean, I only got to play the one time, so.
Yeah. Well, the way I played it was a limit cash game, and it was all in or fold. So it wasn't all in or fold, but it was raise or fold because you couldn't go all in because it was limit. So it was raise or fold. So
that makes sense.
You could literally you could do some other strategy there because you could bet and think they're going to fold because they didn't make their hand. But then if they raise you, then you have to consider, do I raise back to make them prove that I really have a hand and go, because they have to be capped one way or the other. You have to get to a cap or somebody has to fold. So. And so there was more strategy in that than this. I've never actually tried what you've done, so that sounds pretty interesting. I mean, it takes a lot of the skill out of it, obviously. I mean, there's some skill in analyzing what your players are going to do around you and what's a better-than-average hand and situational stuff, but for the most part, yeah, it sounds like it's just flipping coins.
Yeah, it's kind of like the with the fungo drills, right?
I don't know, is it?
Or plain pepper.
Playing pepper, yeah, okay.
We're going to fundamentals, you know. You're not going to gonna make the all-star team for your warm-ups.
So I guess I got off the ship on Coco K. I didn't get off in the actual Bahamas stop. But, you know, Gene and I said, you know, I'm going to go to the island because I've never gone to the island the last time I went on here. And you know, all the other private islands, I don't usually get off then. I usually stay on the ship and relax. But, you know, they had this barbecue, and I thought maybe they'd actually have barbecued things there, which they did. They had ribs, so that was kind of cool. But
ribs were good.
Yeah. So I said, I'm going to get off and see what this is like. So Ginny and I get off, and we're sitting on that pontoon thing or whatever the hell that boat was. And this guy sits down right next to us, and he's got the ugliest bathing suit, like, ever. It's this white with blue flowers, like Hawaiian, big Hawaiian, like, I don't know, just huge blue, ugly flowers, dark blue, light blue. And I turned to her and I said, Gene, that's exactly the same bathing suit I used to have. And she says, no, it's not. I said, yes, it is. That's the exact same ugly suit. I said, that's why I'm wearing this cool suit now, because I didn't like that other one. I wouldn't wear it. And she's like, no, no, you're wearing that suit because the other one you have is plain blue, and you don't like wearing that one. It's too old looking. And I'm like, no, I'm telling you, that suit is the ugliest suit ever, and you bought it for me, and I have it, and it's in the closet back home, and I'll show you when I get home. It is the ugliest suit ever. I can't believe you got it. She's like, I didn't get it for you. It's not your suit. So this goes on for like 15 minutes, like almost the whole ride over to the island, right, from the boat. And I'm like, oh, my God. I can't believe you bought me that suit to wear. I would never wear that suit. You know, it's so ugly. So we're spending the day and everything, and we get back on the ship, and Gene and I go back to the room and start getting ready for dinner. And I said, well, I'm going to head up to the poker room first, hon, and then I'll be back, and then we'll go back to dinner. She's like, okay. So I close the door, turn around, start walking down the hall, and who comes around the corner but Scott wearing this ugly bathing suit. And I said, oh, that's right. It was Scott who wore the ugly bathing suit when we were... So this guy had the exact same ugly bathing suit that you had, and I've seen you in it like so many times now because of all these damn cruises we take together that I actually thought that I owned the suit.
Well, technically, you probably own half of it.
Yeah, I want the outside half of that bathing suit, not the inside. But, yeah, I was like, oh, my God, I really thought that I owned it, and I had it, because I'd seen it so many times, and I'm like, oh, it's Scott's suit. Thank God I don't own that suit.
Well, hey, you know, now, who's not going to want to come on the next cruise?
I know, because they're going to get to see you in that suit.
People are going to want to see that suit, because, you know, we just put a bunch of pictures up on our Facebook page, but I don't think any of them had that suit in them.
No.
So the only way you're going to see it now... is to come on the Winter India Poker Cruise. And remember, the rate guarantee deadline for that is September 22nd. You can book after that. Can't guarantee the rate. Can't guarantee you'll have cabins. You want to go? Better call me up before September 22nd. And remember, that's a 7-night cruise sailing out of wonderful New Orleans, going to Mexico, Jamaica, Grand Cayman. Lee Childs is back. He's excited. He'll be doing a free class on board. And for all of our women out there, we're doing a special women's tournament sponsored by the Lips Tour. And, of course, much, much more, including the open bar cocktail party.
Yep.
Go to annieupmagazine.com/cruise for the updated schedule and FAQs and all kinds of other stuff. And, of course, the phone number to call me.
I was really happy with how many people enjoyed Lee's class, and then of course the cruise too. I've gotten a lot of people you know, just emailing us and twittering and tweeting or whatever you want to call it, and just saying how much fun they had, and they're so sad to be home now. They wish they were back on the cruise and stuff. So it really was a really good time, and I anticipate you know, New Orleans is going to be even better, you know, 7 nights out of there and 3 stops, so should be a really good time.
Should be a lot of fun. But right now we're going to have fun with our mailbag, which we always do.
Yes.
We get great stuff, and particularly from this particular contributor, Mike Cantor. He's one of our world travelers.
Yes.
I think he lives up in New York City, something like that. But he's the one that wrote in before. I don't know if you remember this, but he went up to the Casino Montreal and was telling us about the different cards there. You know,
yeah.
How you have like R's instead of K's or something like that?
Yep.
Our world traveler, and every year he goes to Cannes.
Right. They're both fine.
All right. Cannes, France. Choose your own pronunciation. And he makes an annual trip there. You know, life is tough, apparently, for some people.
Yeah, it must be rough.
You know, our annual trip is going on the India Poker Cruise.
Yeah.
So he went there, and he gave us a mini little trip report, but a couple interesting things obviously comes up whenever he travels. And he went to the Palm Beach Casino 3 times while he was there, Chris.
Man.
First time he got there at 12:30 a.m. Now, I don't know how old Mike is here, but he's not 39, all right? Because at 12:30 a.m., I'm in bed. Or at least I'm already where I'm going to get. I'm not still out, you know, hopping around.
Plus, it's like 6 hours different, so like if it was like one of the first nights, I mean, it's like 6:30 a.m. to him. You know what I mean? That's crazy.
That's Waffle House time. All right, so we got there at 12:30 a.m. and said the place was packed. 5 cash games going on, 250 or 500 euro minimum buy-in, 5-5 or 5-10 blinds.
Oof, big games. So,
you know, hey, but it's Cannes. Con. A lot of money there. He says, his wife's cousin and I put her name on the wait list. And there are only two people ahead of us. But after an hour of waiting, only one person had come off the list. Yeah, I've been to rooms like that.
Yeah.
At 3 a.m., I was ready to go home, which is good because I'm getting up soon, Mike. And, you know, I want to hit some breakfast.
Yeah, really?
So his cousin went back to the poker room and asked what the deal was. Turns out there were a lot of regulars who had come in and got seated right away. And there were two lists, one for us plebes, his word, not mine, and one for the regulars. And it was so, Chris, have we ever heard of this happening before?
Well, it's interesting that he says this. Now, this isn't exactly the same example, but and maybe it's a European thing, but, you know, when I went to Italy, a lot of people may know this, when they can clearly tell you're a tourist and you're at a restaurant, they seat you, like, in the front of the restaurant. But if you're like, a regular, you know, you live there or whatever, the locals get to sit in the back, and they get served different food, better food, and
really?
it's quieter and darker. Yeah, so it's kind of the similar kind of thing where, hey, it's one of our, you know, countrymen playing, and the guy lives down the street, and he comes here every day. I'm going to get him to play because he's going to be the one that's going to stay here, whereas we know you're a tourist and you're going home after tomorrow. We don't really care if you're happy. We just want your money. So I don't know if that's actually the case, but it's very similar to the whole food thing there. I mean, that's what they did in Italy to me. And I've read it in books like those Frommers and Lonely Planets and stuff. They say that. You know, if you can speak Italian fairly well, you might want to try to convince the host to put you in the local place because it's a lot more fun and it's more private and the food's better. So maybe that's the same kind of thing.
Well, they should start caring about it because they don't know that they're going to be on the Ania PokerCast.
That's right.
You know, I've never seen this, though I know a lot of rooms actually will do call-in lists, which is not the same thing. But, you know, if you're a regular, you can call in and say, hey, put me on the list and I'll be there in 30 minutes or so. And they don't hold up the seat for you, but, you know, they'll skip over you and go to the next. But, you know, it gets you on the list before you get there.
Right.
That's about the only thing I've ever seen in the U.S., but,
right. Yeah, I've never seen that in America as far as that's concerned. That's bizarre.
Well, he had a couple more things, too. He went back later on, and he won a 14-player, $120 Euro tournament. Brag. He said most players knew what they're doing, fun to talk to. He said one topic that came up, Chris, is that there were very few women who played. Of course, his cousin was one of them.
Uh-huh.
But this, at this point, had already gone back to Paris. Oh, you know, again, tough life.
Yeah, rough.
But he said this was certainly the case. He was there. He said he never saw one woman at the table in all three of his visits.
Hmm. Interesting. I mean, that's weird. Very weird.
And then he said, of course, they all called each other Monsieur, which I found more palatable in French. the final note, there are no poker rooms in the room.
No poker, no poker magazines in the room.
No poker magazines in the room.
There are no poker rooms in the room. How do you do that?
Yeah. That'd be great. You know, you have your regular room and your tourist room.
That's right.
He said, all right, there are no poker magazines in the room. That sounds much better.
Yeah.
So, Chris, he highly recommends us finding a Cannes-based anti-up ambassador and getting over there to play or at least to cover the European championships.
I think that he goes there enough that he could actually serve that role for us if he wants.
Oh, bummer, because I just booked a ticket for myself. But, you know, I was going to ask you, you know, who should go, but I figured you were just going to let me go anyhow. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'll practice my Monsieur.
Get ready to eat baguettes.
And get there at way earlier than 12:30, so I'll have a chance to get on the table there. All right, Mike, we appreciate the trip report, and we know you did not get your swag last time for whatever reason, so we are going to be happy to send you a send you the swag this time. And we're going to set you a uncut sheet of those J-Design playing cards, official playing cards of Anti-Up. You can only win the uncut sheets, but you can buy the cards at the Anti-Up store at antiupstore.com. And I'll apologize in advance, Mike. These are amazing cards, but they're going to have KQJ on them. So you're going to have somebody decipher what they are for you.
Hey, you know what I forgot to do before we went on the cruise? I forgot to turn on our hotline answering machine. So we have no calls this week. I'm sorry. Blame me. Blame it on Rio. Whatever you want to do. But I forgot to do it. So 813-448-1120. You guys have something interesting to say, call, let us know. We use it on the show. We'll give you something cool like a t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which hells hilarious. Ah, see, I screwed up. See that?
Yeah. Yeah, you see,
which hells is hilarious, but that doesn't really make sense. But but they sell hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Annie Up store at www.annieupstore.com.
So should we line then?
Should we what?
Change the name of it to Cold Line?
Oh, maybe. The Cold Line.
Instead of the Hotline?
Yeah, the Ice Cold Line.
Yeah.
We should get some you know, alcoholic beverage to sponsor it. We call it the Ice Cold Pabst Blue Ribbon Line or whatever you want to call it.
Well, you know, the call of floor was going. Even though Jody was on the cruise ship and busy running our room impeccably and some great tournaments, we did have time for the call of floor segment. And Russ from Phoenix is what wrote in this week, Chris, and this is what he had to say. About 2 or so hours into playing a home game, a new game to the group, Min bets out of turn with 2 people to act before him post-flop.
A new guy.
Kick him out of the game.
Yeah, okay.
These new guys. Yeah. After a quick debate, most of the people playing said he could pull it back. Seemed like an honest mistake. The first player to act then bets, the next player folds, and the new guy pushes all in! First player flips out. Raise your hand if you saw that coming. After a few, quote, colorful words, he folds. How could this have been avoided? It seemed like the ultimate angle shoot. Should we have let the new guy pull his bet back? First of all, new guys don't get any rule. No love, you know?
Yeah, no, they're new.
Yeah, it's like plebes at the Naval Academy, right? Or pledges in a fraternity, you know? They're not humans.
Well, I guess Jody's answer will answer all this stuff.
More
so,
professional than we are.
Yeah. He says, it seems like the situation was handled correctly according to TDA rules. TDA rule number 36, action out of turn, will be binding if the action to that player has not changed, which I agreed with. That's what I was going to say. Check, call, or fold does not change action. If action changes, the out-of-turn bet is not binding and is returned to the out-of-turn player who has all options, including calling, raising, or folding. An out-of-turn fold is binding. The correct way to handle the situation is to leave the new guy's bet in front of him until it is actually his turn. The one thing not made clear in this scenario is the amount the other player bet. If the amount of the other player's bet was the same as the new guy, you leave the new guy's bet in the pot. If the amount of the other guy's player's bet was more than the minimum bet our new guy made, then the new guy has the option of taking his bet back and acting differently by folding, calling, and raising the action. So, ultimate angle shoot? Not really, right? Because the action changed when it got to him. He could do something different, and he did what he wanted to do, right?
Yep, yeah. But I understand the spirit of the problem here.
Yes, yes. And we've had that problem in our home game once. Remember that time it was Omaha, I think? It was Pot Limit Omaha, and it was either Omaha or Pot Limit Omaha, but I was sitting back in my chair, and I thought Faso had checked on my right, so I checked, hoping to get a check raise out of someone. And then, because I wanted to get an extra bet in, and then when I noticed that he didn't check, and I said, oh, sorry, then someone else bet ahead of him, and then I raised, and everybody got all mad. They're like, that's an angle shoot. And I was like, no, because I didn't see what happened, and the action didn't change from my check, so I could change what I wanted to do. So we had that problem before. That was a couple years ago.
Yeah, I think most of these, and I think we see this often on the call of floor, when there's a mistake made, it's bad all around.
Yeah.
Even if you can fix it or undo the action or something, it's unfortunate. And I think that's the situation here. I mean, if this person obviously had a good hand and was willing to bet it and just didn't realize the action wasn't on him yet, so he bet, but then it's told you can and pull it back, and then somebody bets again, well, if my hand is really good, then what I would normally do, I would raise.
Yeah.
So it just looks like an angle shoot because we had some unfortunate information that happened before. But, you know, obviously the TDA rules are done for a reason, so I'm not trying to suggest changing it. But, I mean, I guess if you want to, in your home game, you know, institute a penalty of some sort, you could, you know, you got to take responsibility for not paying attention to the action.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess I can see that, but that's not the TDA rule. But so I don't necessarily think it's an angle you can call it for sure an angle shoot. It's just an unfortunate situation, and then, you know, if people are allowed to take advantage of it, they will.
Yeah, especially in this case, because the guy can't The guy can't know that he acted out of turn with a bet, knowing that they were going to let him take the bet back, and then knowing that someone was going to make a bet before him so that he could actually now go all in. I mean, there's no way he angle shot it that way. There's just no way. He wanted to bet, and then he bet because he thought he was first to act or first in this instance. So there's no way it's an angle shoot, but it is unfortunate, and it happens.
Well, I wouldn't say there's no way it's an angle shoot, but I would say
it's odd. Yeah, it's very rough for him to have known what was in someone else's head and everyone else's head that would allow him to pull his bet back. So it's very odd or rare that that could be an angle shoot, but I wouldn't say that it is.
Yeah. So, folks, the lesson of this, just don't screw up.
Yeah, don't mess up.
Yeah, yeah. If you just do everything perfectly, there's no problems. All right, our feedback. I like this, Drew, Chris, because to the TDA, I mean, we know these are hot-button issues for our players, right?
Absolutely.
They love hearing about the rules. They love sending in, finding out, you know, whether they're right or wrong. And we, you know, we did that long show with Nick a couple weeks ago talking about the new TDA rules. And immediately after that, we got a email from a listener whose last name I have zero chance.
I'll say his name
correctly. All right, good.
It's Jeff Canostas.
Canostas.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a pretty cool sounding name.
Yeah.
I guess that's probably what I would have guessed.
Yeah.
All right, well, anyhow, Jeff writes in, and, you know, we mentioned one of the new rules is number 47, in case you're keeping track at home. Conditional statements, and here's the rule. Conditional statements of future action are strongly discouraged. They may be binding and or subject to penalty. And the example they give is if-then statements, such as, if you bet, then I will raise. All right. All right, so this is what he wrote in, and he said, I've enjoyed the podcast from its inception. So he's already throwing out words.
Wow.
Inception?
That was a great movie.
Yeah, you know, it's still on my DVR. I haven't watched it yet.
You gotta watch it. Gotta watch it.
He says, the phrase maybe is not conditional. It's actually subjective. All right, so folks, you tune into the Annie Up PokerCast for very sharp poker commentary. Strategy analysis, and now you're getting English lessons as well.
Gotta love the grammar.
Actually, grammar, right? See? Yeah, you screwed up for him.
Whatever.
Actually, subjective. An if-then statement is conditional when the if statement is true, logic demands that the then clause must be enforced. Now I feel like I'm dealing with a binary bunch here. In a sense, it is binding. He says, the trickiest part is when the if statement is false and the then statement winds up being true on its own. Consider a world in which the following statement is always true. If a person plays craps, then he lives in Connecticut. You meet a guy who plays craps. Is he from Connecticut? He must be. You meet a guy from Connecticut. Does he play craps? Maybe. The if-then statements actually allows for the existence of some netmeggers to play craps. To not play craps, I'm sorry. And he goes on to say he's not one of them. With an exclamation point. I really don't know why we need to go that far. I mean, craps is a fun game, so.
Oh, man. It was funny because I actually got this email from him while I was driving in my car. And so I'm like, it's not necessarily texting because we're writing, you know, writing emails. But I'm trying to frantically type to him with my left hand while I'm driving and staring at my right hand. And I'm like, now I know why there's laws in place for this to be illegal,
yes,
you know.
Thank you.
But it was funny because he ends up coming from a town where I right near my house, and we lived in the same county, and I used to work in the town where he lived, and he actually taught students that I used to go to school with, and it was such a small world. We were going back and forth, and at the end I was like, remind me again what you emailed me about and why you emailed me this. So it was pretty funny. But yeah, I know what he's saying about the binding if-then things, and it's true. You got to be careful what you say at the table.
So I'm guessing there's a whole cottage industry of angle shooting that can be on with grammar now, right?
Yeah. If you bet, I may raise.
Yeah. That was an if, not a then.
It was a may, not a then. Floor. All right. Well, we got the professor in because we need an English lesson over here. Jeez.
All right, a little bit of housekeeping before we move on. Our Jack's 50K cash game, Chad Brown, No Limit Texas Hold'em Championship. And our guest stints on the Windy City Poker Championship are all now available on YouTube for your laughter. And you can find all those links in the news section of AnnieUpMagazine.com.
I watched a little bit of them. I think we did a good job. I don't think it was funny.
Well, no, but I mean, I'm not saying anymore. funny. We had some zingers in there, so I mean, there was some purposely funny stuff in there. I'm just saying, you know, people, when they like to see people they know on TV, they generally like to laugh at them.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I had a friend that was on Forensic Files.
You did?
Yeah. We watched it all. We had all of our couple friends came over, and we were watching it together, and we're still teasing them about it. Some of the mannerisms and things. In fact, actually, we teased him so hard about it because he had this line that said some sort of chord, and we kept rewinding it like 90 times, and we're all giggling on the ground. So much so that he named his fantasy team some kind of chord later on. So see, it's just natural to laugh at our friends on TV. So I'm just letting people know they can laugh at us there. And then when they're laughing about it, they can go talk about it on Facebook and Twitter.
Don't forget to like us. I watched this whole thing by what's that, Lester Holt, that news guy. He did the Facebook obsession or something. Watched that whole thing. It was pretty good. It's very interesting, and I find it interesting that like 1 in 12 people in the world are on Facebook, and I'm one of the 12 that aren't still. It's pretty cool that I'm pretty soon I'm going to be in the minority. It's pretty good.
Yeah, you and the Aborigines. About it.
All right, let's see what's kicking on the Ante Up news desk.
The World Poker Tour has announced its 10th season with some enhancements. All events will have live streaming of final tables. Winners will gain membership to the Champions Club. That includes concierge service. Stops have been added in Jacksonville, Florida, and Philadelphia. And the set has been enhanced with the Royal Flush Girls Social Bar.
Well, let's go back to this Champions Club. Like, is that like when you go to the airport and you fly first class and they give you free oranges and you can sit down and have some chocolate?
Yeah. You got probably a little lounge there, and you get a little card, and you know you can just like flash it. Hey, I'm a champion. You know, I don't know exactly all the details. I know they mentioned the concierge service, which was cool. Because, you know, when I'm at a tournament, what I really want is a concierge.
Yeah.
Come over and give me my blueberries. The WPT has really been, they've been re-energized with the new ownership, so.
Yeah, and they're really, really trying to catch up to the World Series as far as stops and stuff. I mean, everywhere now. They have like 3 in Florida now.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You know, we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But, yeah, it's pretty crazy how they're moving fast on this. And it makes smart branding. And, really, what does it cost them to do these other ones? Because it's just, you know, a lot of them aren't even televised, so they're just branding. So it's smart thing to do.
And I just want our listeners to know, too, how, you know, fair and ethical we are here at Ante Up. Because for the second year in a row, I was turned down to become a Royal Flush Girl. And I could have easily just not mentioned WPT on our show at all. But no, I think it's important that we mention it.
Well, the reason you got turned down was because for the bathing suit competition, you wore that stupid blue and white flowered bathing suit.
That's true.
You put on the Ante Up Speedo, and you're going to get that spot, buddy.
See, none of my friends are as honest with me as you are. So I've been wearing that bathing suit for 20 years, and now I know I need to go out and get something a little sexier.
There you go. Season 11 is on your mark there. You're gonna make it, I promise. All right, the Massachusetts governor and the House and Senate leaders have reached a deal on legislation that would auction licenses for 3 full-service casinos in the state. The agreement must advance through the legislature first and likely will face strong opposition from casino forces outside of the state.
You were very strategic there, Deval. Yes. Patrick.
Yeah, I didn't have to read Deval.
You purposely just ignored it so you wouldn't...
I want to make sure I didn't misread that, so I just said, you know, hey, it's just as important to say the governor and the Senate leader. So
of course, I don't know for sure that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, so that's why I didn't do it.
You know, it's probably Butch. You know,
so what do we think about this? Because I know that Massachusetts had some sort of charity things going on, too, if I remember correctly from our Northeast correspondent telling me that. So they've had some sort of poker there before.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, this is an extension of what's going on all across our country is, you know, budgets are really tight and getting tighter and tighter. You know, shoot, our president's going on TV tonight to tell us how tight our budget is here overall in the United States. And so people are looking for anything. And, of course, casinos, it's hard to ignore what they can do for your budget shortfall.
Yeah.
And then particularly, it's not just that so much now. It's just the keeping up with the Joneses. I mean, you know, you got obviously the big casinos in Connecticut for a while. But, you know, now you got the Pennsylvania, you got the Delaware. I mean, they're not exactly right next to Massachusetts, but they certainly draw those people out of the state.
Yeah.
So it's a double whammy if you don't have it. You don't get the benefits from having it, and then you lose tourist dollars, you know, dragging – Well, you lose $200 in general, but you also lose money from your own citizens that go somewhere else to vacation. So it's just going to, you know, keep happening across the country, I think. So so three full-service casinos. And then I think they have, like, a slot parlor, too, that they're going to have. But, you know, that's a lot of casinos for a small state in terms of landmass.
Yeah, yeah. And I believe our correspondent, Kay Fitzpatrick, is going to write about that in this October issue. So if you want to read more about it, pick up Annie Up.
And finally, the lawyers representing Full Tilt Poker, its related companies and pros named in player lawsuits, have asked to be removed from the case.
So the lawyers for Full Tilt are quitting, is basically what you're telling me.
That's what it sounds like.
Wow. Jeez, that's not... I mean, most of the time when lawyers quit in the middle of a case, they run the risk of being disbarred. Isn't that true?
You know what? That has not come up on Franklin and Bash this year.
I know, but that's how they put it on TV. Whenever, like, you watch a movie or something, Hollywood always says, "Oh, you're going to be disbarred, or I'll recommend you for disbarment because you're quitting this case or whatever." So.
But you know, numerous rumors as to why this is happening, and you know, we're trying hard now to stay away from the rumors.
Yes.
So we're not going to add to them, but. You know, definitely you can check it out on the internet. And I don't encourage people to read and listen to rumors, but I do think it's interesting to read what people think and thinking about some of the things going on that could lead to it and what this all means. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean it's as nefarious as it sounds, you know.
No, I know.
Or it could be.
Just,
or then.
Just read as much as you can and make your own decisions. Hey, O'Malley is back from vacation as well. It's time to start a new O'Malley's Move.
So you think he's upset that we said he's on vacation and we didn't actually take him on vacation with us?
Nah, I don't think so. He's pretty cool.
All right.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. We're sitting in a $2-$4 PLO8 game and have clearly overextended ourselves. We're playing at limits that are too high for what we're comfortable with and against players that are at least two levels ahead of us. This has forced us to play way too tight and scared. We are by far the short stack at the table with $341, as we've lost over $150 so far. There are 8 players at the table, and the average stack is over 1,000. Under the gun folds, under the gun plus one calls with just under $1,500. He bought in for 1,000 and seems to be a very solid player. We're next to act and look down at ace of clubs, king of spades, king of clubs, three of hearts. Considering our present circumstance, we have to raise here. Even though raising generally telegraphs the strength of our hand, we just don't want to play this pot out of position against this table. With only $341 and the pot currently at $10, we make it $12 to go, hoping to buy the button with this bet. And we do. It's folded around to the big blind, another solid player, with around 1,000 behind. He calls, as does our original limper. The pot stands at $38, and the flop comes jack of clubs, eight of spades, deuce of diamonds. That's certainly not a ricky-ticky-tavy flop, but we'll take it. We do still have an overpair, and have picked up the nut low draw. First to act checks, and our limp caller makes it 20 to go. We tank for a second, thinking of his possible range. Could he have flopped a set? Is he betting his own nut low draw? It's also likely he knows we have a big pair in the hole. Perhaps he thinks we're playing something like ace-ace, deuce-x, and he knows our low is counterfeited. But we're still pretty strong here. We have the nut low draw with a backdoor flush draw. Additionally, any king that comes on the turn will give us the nut high, with redraws to a boat. We make the call, as does the first to act. The pot is $98, and the turn is the three of clubs. Well, now our low really has been counterfeited, but we pick up a whole new series of outs to get the high. What's more, is it's checked around to us. We're on the nut flush draw, with a long shot draw at a winning low. Are we checking behind?
All right, Chris, it's been a little more than a year since Florida took the handcuffs off its poker industry. but not long enough for me to quit using that cliche.
I know you. I almost rewrote it for you on our notes just because you say it all the time. That's okay, though. That's what everybody loves about you. Otherwise, they wouldn't listen.
Acknowledging it is the first step to not doing it anymore.
That's true.
So maybe next year when we do our second year anniversary of the flirt thing, I will come up with a better cliche. But no, it's been a year since we've had allowed to deal any limits here in Florida. And a few of our listeners have suggested we do a Florida travel show, which makes sense. We get a lot of people to Florida coming down here.
Yes.
Bringing the family, going to see the rat.
Indeed.
You know, doing some other things. And they want to know where to play. And we could do that show. All right. We could tell people where to go play. But, you know, it's been a year since all this happened. So let's add a little beef to it. And talk about what's happened here in Florida over the last year. And then, of course, we'll get around to what people asked us to do. Tell them where to play.
At least we're doing it. Ultimately, we will be doing it.
All we're doing is enhancing the ideas from our listeners. We're not ignoring it, just enhancing it.
Well, I think we should start with what's changed. I mean, it's been a year, and a lot of stuff has changed, and people are adjusting to the new situations here. So let's go over some of those things.
All right, well, the big thing I think people are paying attention to is revenue. And year-over-year revenue, and I'm using these big-time hoity-toity business terms.
Yes.
Essentially is the revenue in June 2010 compared to June 2011. June 2011 up 17%. And that's, you know, when I talked to the managers last year right before they started, I was asking them what they would expect. Some obviously were more optimistic than others, but most said, you know, right around 15%. So it's to me, it's actually amazing that we're hitting right about what most people thought, which means we got some pretty smart managers here in Florida.
Yeah, and the question I have too is, even though the revenue is up, revenue does that necessarily mean profits, or does that just mean how much revenue they've generated? Because if it's just revenue, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're making more money then, right? Because it took more to make to lost those hours and more staff and.
Very true, very true. I mean, most of these companies are private, so I don't think we actually have the numbers on their actual. Profit, but you know, from a tax standpoint, the tax doesn't change at all. So there's nothing taxy about it that makes a difference.
Right.
But you're right. I mean, obviously, you're doing longer operating hours. You probably hired more staff. I'm sure your costs have gone up as well. Now, whether the costs have gone up 17%, I doubt that. So yeah. I would think it's still probably good. But yeah, you're right. It's not like, you know, they've got 17% more money to play with this year than they did last year.
Okay.
And what's also interesting to me, I think, is some rooms are actually down year over year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably the smaller rooms, right?
Yeah, some of the smaller rooms and some of the bigger rooms are up more than that. So, you know, it's not across the board 17%. It's an average, of course.
Yeah. I know that one of the things that's changed a lot this year, is that, because we wanted it to, was that there are a lot of big money games now you can find pretty much in every area, though not every room. I guess there are some 25-50 games that are being reported in the bigger rooms. Also, you know, if you remember at Jacksonville, like we talked about earlier in the show, now you can see it on TV, they had that 50K buy-in in February that we covered. So that was a huge thing. And that they're talking about doing that like quarterly or something. So we'll see if they're going to keep bringing that back. I don't know with all the stuff to do with the World Poker Tour now, if they're going to or not. But
Yeah, so. I think I heard they did one in last month, August, during their WPT. I don't know if it was that big of a game.
Yeah.
And it certainly wasn't televised. But yeah, I think they're trying to get them going. So, yeah, there are some big money games down here.
And, of course, you know, the big tournaments, like you said, World Poker Tour coming to town now. And the circuit came down for that we played in down in Palm Beach. So just a lot of stuff. And, of course, Heartland Poker Tour now is going to Daytona. So that's three of the major tours now landing in Florida the minute we get the shackles released from us. So.
No, the shackles. That's so much better than handcuffs.
Is it? Okay.
All right, I'm going to work on that. Shackles. Oh, I like that.
I might use another one later on in the show, too. I'll let you
know. Oh, okay. All right. But, you know, both from the expansive market here in Florida and also how aggressive World Poker Tour was, but, I mean, I think it's three rooms in Florida have WPT deals now.
Yeah.
And not all of them are, you know, main event television deals, but, you know, that's a lot of WP.
Yeah, I mean, that's, West Palm, down in, Hollywood, Seminole Hard Rock's got one.
Hollywood.
Yeah, the Jacksonville franchise has them, those three, well, they have two, but they're going to have a third book room opening soon. And then our local one right here, Derby Lane, everyone knows Derby Lane who listens to our show. They just landed one recently too, so we're pretty excited. It's three deals, and it's good for us because it's more business, more content for the magazine, more reasons to come to Florida, and we're real excited about it.
Yeah, and you know, some of these, I mean, obviously these are all three very solid brands too, and that makes it a little easier to get people to travel. Not that you had to beg people to come to Florida for the most part,
right?
Because people like coming here anyhow, but you know, it makes it a little easier when hey. A week-long tournament series, or a week-long tournament series at the World Poker Tour series, or something like that. You know, it's easier to go for the second one because you kind of have an expectation of what that means.
Yeah.
So, a couple of things haven't changed, and one of them that I still lament every day is that Limit Poker didn't make a comeback.
No, not really.
Only a few rooms in the state are consistently getting limit games above 2-4. And Pot Limit Omaha is actually seeing a little bit of growth. But you know, if you are not a No Limit Hold'em player, it's been a tough year, I think.
Yeah, I really thought that Limit would, you know, and even our columnist friend Antonio Panzari, he was teaching guys how to play, you know, Limit because he thought that like 20-40 games are going to break out and stuff. And you know, they really, I mean, and they may be a little bit sporadic here and there, but they really haven't. And not that I was going to play in a 20-40 game, but I would like to play in like a 6-12 or, you know, 5-10 kind of stud 8 game or something, you know, or yeah. Limit Hold'em. But, yeah, it just hasn't happened. It's a shame.
You know, there's also, I haven't seen, maybe you have seen, but I haven't seen a lot of evidence to support these predictions that hundreds of pros will be moving to Florida. And taking up residence down here. I mean, obviously, I think a lot of pros have come to visit and played some of the events, but I don't know whether a lot of them have actually bought houses and are playing here regularly now.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard of that. As a matter of fact, if anything, what I heard was, you know, they came into town, won as much as they could, and then left.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely didn't move. They probably just stayed with friends that already lived here and then headed out. But not that it's not a slow process. There may be people who are moving here gradually, but yeah, it wasn't this sort of, you know, gold rush like, you know, California had years and years and years ago. But yeah, no,
we're
you're
also
right.
Only a year in too. I mean, the market's still growing. I mean, it's still it's an infant really in big time poker right now. So, you know, in the future, who knows? You know, some of these rooms down here are going to continue to grow and become big. And you know, 5 years from now, we might be laughing the fact that we said that, you know, within a year of the loss,
exactly,
we didn't have to make a bunch of pros here,
exactly.
And, you know, this is kind of the double whammy for me, Chris. And this is really, I think, I'm really trying to reconcile this in my brain. Because, naturally, I was pushing for these new laws. I mean, who wouldn't want, you know, take the restrictions off and let people play? And, of course, obviously, it's been good for our business, so I'm not saying it's bad there. But from a player standpoint, I'm playing a lot less now than I did a year ago. You know, these limit games didn't get going, which I like to play. I'm not really a no-limit cash game player, but I would play it back then because I got the $100 kind of, like, built-in protection.
Yeah.
And pause here to let our deep stack players tell me how that's ridiculous, and I agree, but it's different. So then what I ended up doing is playing tournaments, which, again, is not great for the bankroll either, but at least I was enjoying it. And now when I go to the room to, you know, approve the pages and stuff, which is about the only time of the month I can actually get out, you know, the tournament now has maybe 30, maybe 40 people, where before it had 70 or 80.
Yeah.
And there's no limit games going, so then I got to get in the 1-2 no limit and put $200 on the table instead of 100. It's really weird. So, I mean, the daily tournament business has dried up, I think, a lot of places, depending on the room. Some rooms are still doing really good daily tournament. But I think what we're seeing is those players are migrating to real no-limit games now, which they couldn't play a year ago. Or they're saving their tournament money for the bigger tournaments that we talked about that are coming in, or the satellites for them. And there's less of a market for the daily $40, $50, $60, $70 tournament.
Yeah, and that's not to say that they aren't scheduled and that every room doesn't have them, because if you pick up our magazine, you'll see them all scheduled, and they will have them, but they may just be 20 or 30-player tournaments rather than 120 like it used to be. You know, you show up on a Saturday or even a Monday or something at Derby Lane years ago, you'd get 140 players in the tournament, sell out, you know, or whatever. So, you know, it's not that they're not having them every day, because they are, and they have a tournament area and everything, but it's just that, yeah, they are drying up a little bit.
It's just a little different. And I didn't mention this before, too, and it wasn't a big market here in Florida, but obviously before the laws changed, sit and goes were a good way around not having real no limit poker. Because you can buy in at that point, I think up to $800 if you wanted to, and play a sit and go and win some good money.
Yeah.
Now there's really no reason for people to play sit and goes, you know, because they can go play the no limit cash games and win their money that way. So I haven't seen a lot of sit and goes going anywhere.
No, that's
anymore
true.
Either.
That's true. And you know, we used to always have like every single entry would say sit and goes and the prices. Now they don't even, you know, they're not even mentioning them, and we're asking them what they want to list for their poker room that month. So you're right, they have dried up definitely. So one of the things that's exciting is that the market is still growing, like you said. You know, mm-hmm. So we got a lot of stuff that's coming up. At least 3 new rooms are expected by the end of next year. Creek Entertainment, that's what, Gretna, right?
Yep.
They're going to open a room in the Panhandle on December 15th. Jacksonville is supposed to open its 3rd room by the spring in Hialeah Park, which has been taking a long time.
It has been.
Right? I mean, we were getting calls about this for the manager's job like 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
pending any legal disputes, hopes to open its room, in the winter? So,
2012, yeah.
Winter 2012. Didn't we hear a rumor that the Florida Keys, they might try to open a room up there or down there or something?
Well, yeah, it's not so much a rumor. It's actually real people talking about it. It's just whether it's going to succeed. But there's 2 competing groups trying to open a room in the Keys, which would be a nice place for a poker room. But, you know, here in Florida, it's not so much, you know, one of the... I think people don't understand is, you know, hey, you want to open a poker room? You got enough money to open a poker room? Open a poker room. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
It actually doesn't work like that in most places anyhow, because, you know, there's limits on how many licenses there are. And that's kind of the case here. So we got 2 possible licenses that are in play that could result in something in the Keys. But, you know, real early right now. But, I mean, that could end up being 4 new rooms.
Not that I want to extend the show any longer than I have to, but what do you think about a room in Florida Keys? You said it sounds like a nice idea, but is it populated enough down there? Because you can't rely solely on tourists to play.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a good point. It's, you know, and I've only been to Key West and only for a day on a cruise ship, so I haven't spent a lot of time in the Keys. It just seems like a place that would be nice to have a room, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's, I don't think what people realize is how expansive the Keys are.
Yeah.
You know, you get down to like Miami, you're still 3 hours from Key West.
Yeah.
You know, by car, and I don't know exactly where these rooms were being sited, but you might be able to draw people from both sides. But yeah, it's not going to be a massive room. But you know, for players, you know, all the way out there, you know, it's if you think about it, driving 3 hours now to play poker, how many people want to do that?
Yeah.
You know. Some people are forced to because that's what they have to do. But, you know, if you can cut that down. And then, of course, then you're developing a little bit more of a tourist thing as well, too. I mean, obviously people can go to Fort Lauderdale, Miami, and have a choice of, like, I think there's 12 rooms within, you know, freeway down
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
So it's not like people are all, oh, hey, now we can go to the Keys and play. But, you know, it just adds a little extra element to it.
Well, it's interesting. I just was curious about, because it's obviously going to have to rely a lot on tourism and, you know, you want your regulars. Kind of like a bar. Bars want regulars because those are the ones who pay the bills. So
yeah,
it's tough to do. But well, other rooms too. There are at least 3 of them now that have amazing renovations coming too. Yep. I know our locally here, our Seminole Hard Rock Tampa is putting $75 million into another expansion. They just got finished expanding.
That's all they keep doing.
They just keep doing it.
It's actually massive property. And I don't know. I think there wasn't anything in the notes or the press release on this or whether it's going to do anything for the poker room. Their poker room's already quite large there.
Right.
But, you know, the place keeps getting bigger and bigger. And even if it doesn't change anything structurally about the poker room there, you're bringing more people into the property that will, you know, migrate over to the poker room or bring friends out playing the poker room. So the games are getting bigger, I would
Absolutely.
Think.
Absolutely. And Dania Highlight, one of our favorite places, was bought from Boyd Gaming, and there are plans to add a hotel, nightclub, and slot machines, which is, they got the room. They got the... They got plenty of room to do all that, so that should help them out. And they have a huge tournament business. We're talking about how daily tournaments kind of dried up, but their tournament business is huge, so that can only be good for them.
Yep.
And Miami Hialeah, which I guess is opening in December. We've been waiting a while for them to reopen. They got financing to proceed on a full-scale renovation. They'll add slot machines. So right there alone, you've got 3 properties that are just becoming massive casinos. So it just keeps growing here.
Yeah, a lot of money being plowed into all 3 of those. So You know, obviously the Tampa one, I don't think they're worried about return on investment, but the other two are in that really competitive market down in South Florida. So, you know, it's a lot of money to put in and see how much the market can bear. But, yeah, people aren't shying away from putting money in the market. We like that.
Yeah, you got to like that.
All right, so now we get around to what our listeners actually cared about. All right, thanks for all the gobbledygook, but I'm getting on a plane and I want to know where to play.
Yeah.
All right, well, we mentioned South Florida, and it is by far the biggest market here in Florida, and it, you know, stands to reason. And I mentioned 12 poker rooms, or pokers rooms, as I have on the note here. 12 poker rooms from West Palm Beach down to Miami. Now, of course, that's it's a short drive between those two cities, but the traffic's a killer.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're going to be able to bebop around between 12 rooms. But they are fairly clustered down there. And two of them, the largest pair of motion rooms in the state, Isle Casino in Pompano Beach and Palm Beach Kennel Club up in West Palm Beach. So a lot of poker to be played in South Florida. So, I mean, if you're looking for variety in poker, I would suggest you go to South Florida.
And they're all nice rooms. You know what I mean? It's like there's not a redheaded stepchild in the bunch. You know, I remember that monumental road trip we did. I just, whenever I walked into the rooms, I was just like, wow, this is nice, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, they're all really well run, too, you know? Some of the best rooms, like, in the country are down there. So, yeah, be sure to stop there if you're going to go, because those poker rooms are really worth the trip.
Well, you know, you make a good point, too. I think this is what is most interesting to me when we do all of our traveling that we do for the company and going to see poker rooms. You know, being in Florida, we're used to poker rooms being 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 tables big.
Yeah.
You just expect that when you walk into a poker room. And if it's smaller than that in Florida, you're like, you know, wow, this is tiny.
Yep.
But even some of the tiniest rooms in Florida are bigger than some of the bigger rooms in most other states. It's really a weird juxtaposition. And so, I mean, if you're coming from another area where you're used to playing in 8 or 10 table rooms, I think you're going to be amazed at how big some of these rooms are in Florida. And they have the games going.
Yeah, and you know what really hit home, too, is when we were talking about expanding the magazine, you came up with a list of, you know, we were like, all right, let's see what size rooms these are on. And when you came up with the list by tables, it was like every Florida room was like in the top 50 or something. And it's like, oh, my God, Florida has like the largest poker rooms like in the country, except for California. It's insane.
Oh, yeah, I would say, I mean, I've never done this, but I imagine if you put it in a spreadsheet and you do average number of tables in a state, and you take out maybe Connecticut because there's only two up there and too big. But right. I would think Florida by far would have the highest average table per location.
Per location, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's pretty insane. So you're gonna get a good experience, and you're gonna probably get action when you show up here. So, but of course Tampa, or the Tampa area, I should say, it's our home base. We have 5 rooms, all within an hour's drive from where we are in the middle, I guess.
Yep.
So. Including, like Scott said, 3 WPT events over the next year at Derby Lane. And there's some regular nosebleed games at Tampa Bay Downs, which is you're right in your backyard, that place.
Yep.
And, of course, the Hard Rock Tampa, which is one of the largest grossing casinos in the whole country. So those alone right there are just, you know. And, of course, you can go to Sarasota. We've brought that up on the show. Our good friend Sam runs Sarasota. Nice room down there. One of the first rooms to really embrace making the room beautiful and efficient, and then there's Tampa Greyhound, which is right across from the Hard Rock. So those 5 rooms right there, you know, you really can't go wrong coming here and playing here as well. And Tampa Bay is a great place to visit. You know, there's all kinds of touristy stuff, and you got the Gulf of Mexico and Busch Gardens and everything. So it's a good place to come to.
Northeast Florida is a massive market now. It's growing a lot, and what's interesting about it is there's not a lot of rooms up there to grow, so... but Jacksonville Greyhound Racing, as we mentioned, probably the most aggressive poker company in Florida, and probably one of the most aggressive ones anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, they led lured Deb Jardina from the Wynn, and she brought a bunch of her team members out, and they're getting ready to open that third room we mentioned. That'll be next spring, and it's going to be the largest of their 3, and already the 2 they have are pretty big.
Yep, and successful.
Yep. And then about an hour and a half south from there, you got Daytona Beach Kennel Club, That's a 50-table room, and they're bringing the Heartland Poker Tour to the state in October. First time that's been down here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got in that Northeast, which, you know, I hate to use the cliche redheaded stepchild. I prefer the cliche handcuffs. but, you know, when you think about Florida in general, when people say, I'm going to Florida, you know, it's usually almost always Orlando.
Yeah.
Or Fort Lauderdale, Miami. Occasionally Tampa. Sometimes Southwest Florida. You never hear people say, oh, gosh, I saved up all year. I'm going to go to Jacksonville.
Yeah.
You know, you don't. And it's a beautiful place, and people should go there. And there's definitely poker to be played there. So, I mean, the fact that they're building such a good business in a place that is, you know, fourth or fifth on the tourism demographic for the state, I think it's a big thing.
And like you said, too, I mean, the college kids always go to Daytona for spring break. So if they do that, it's only an hour and a half away to go up to Jacksonville. Or they could just play right there at Daytona Beach Kennel Club. So... yeah, that whole corner is bustling, and they got some great people running those rooms, too, so you know you're going to get some quality service as well. I know that the Panhandle, like we mentioned earlier, Panhandle is funny because when we first started the magazine, it was Ebro, and that was it. You know, there was really nothing else up there. But now, you know, Pensacola Greyhound Track had opened up there, and they're, both those rooms now have some pretty strong numbers. And like we said before, the Creek Entertainment Project, which is Gretna, that poker room is going to be opening soon. So then I have three rooms up there. You know, it started out with just one room when we first started. Now there's three. And who knows, more could pop up soon. But, you know, the Panhandle is right there, and it's all beautiful. Pensacola is beautiful. You know, the beaches. You've actually vacationed up in that way. So
I used to live up,
and live up there,
too.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, gorgeous beaches and great food and nice people. And I think what people are surprised about is, you know, Florida, like a lot of states, you know, they publish the numbers from the Parity Mutuel facilities. And I think a lot of people around the state are looking up at Pensacola, like, man, how are these rooms doing the business they're doing? You know, obviously they're drawing from, you know, Alabama and Georgia and some of the northern places where they can't play. But, you know, they're putting out a good product and getting people to spend their discretionary dollars playing poker there. And, you know, some of these rooms in much more highly populated areas aren't doing quite as well.
No, absolutely. And it is huge to have right over the border like that, two states that don't have poker. So they have to go there to play, really, because they're not going to go north and try to go past their state because that's a three-hour drive. So,
yeah,
you know, and they get some from the New Orleans, you know, Louisiana area, too, but really, it's New Orleans, right? Is that where they'd come from, or is it?
Yeah, Mississippi.
Mississippi, yeah.
Some people make it more, yeah.
But Mississippi. So, I mean, they got some from that, but they already have poker there. It's the other two states that really help contribute to it. And like you said, they're quality products and run by quality people, so it's not surprising that they have good business up there. And they're great rooms. I mean, I remember seeing Ebro the first time and just being like, wow, I love this place. You know, I love not good cell reception, but it was great to play poker in.
And, of course, this is part of the show that everybody's waiting for us to announce all the great poker you can play in Orlando. Because everybody comes down, they bring the kids, they go to Disney World, drop $700, and then put the kids to bed and want to go out and play poker. And I am pleased to announce, Chris, that nothing's changed. No poker in Orlando, at least not for money.
Bar leagues?
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of bar leagues up there to fill the gap. So if you want to go and just, you know, hang out and have a couple beers and win some prizes, you can do that. All kinds of places up there. But if you're looking to play for money, you know, budget an hour and a half, two-hour drive. And the good thing about that is you can go in a number of different locations. I mean, you can go to Tampa, you can go to Melbourne, you can go to Daytona. So wherever you're staying, you know, it's probably an hour and a half to some poker room. But I think people, you know, they pack the whole family on the plane to get down here and just think, hey, it's Florida. There's 30 poker rooms down there. There's got to be one in Orlando. Put one in Orlando.
Yeah.
And there's not. And, you know, the reasons for that, I don't know. I mean, obviously we keep hearing that Disney's not a big fan of it. Though, you know, I was telling somebody that the other day, and they're like, you know, that's crazy, Scott. Why are you saying that? And I'm like, well, you know, it's Disney. They're family-oriented. They're like, yeah, but Disney owns ESPN. Who put the World Series of Poker on? Why wouldn't they want to make money out of that? And I'm like, all right, okay, you win. That's a good point. But I think it's different, you know.
Yeah, but you know, that means they also own ABC and Desperate Housewives. And that doesn't mean that they like, you know, promoting, you know, cheating on your husband and killing your neighbor either, you know. So, you know, six of one, half dozen of the other, I think. But, no, you're right. Orlando is – they're pushing hard for it, though. I mean – you know, the Kennel Club there is trying desperately to show people that, you know, the element that'll show up to play poker is not a bad element, and we can make a lot of money for our cities or our towns or our counties, and you need to really embrace it. But so far, no luck.
Yeah, and just in case folks are a little confused, like, again, why can't they open one? It's a legality thing that we got two paramutuals right smack in the middle of Orlando that are desperate to open it, but you have to, in Florida, you have to have a local option. You have a local government say, yes, bless you.
Yeah.
And the local governments have not been willing to do that there for various reasons. So when they do, you know, as soon as they can get a government to say, yes, you can, boom. I bet you that poker room's open in 6 hours.
And it's going to be the biggest room in the state,
yep.
Believe me. So, but you know, if you want to learn any more about any of this stuff too, you can go to our Where to Play page on our website. There's plenty of links and maps. And we had our longtime listener, Blazman, come into town a little while ago and wanting to know where the poker rooms were. And I told him, because he was going to be like the Ocala area. So I told him about Ocala and stuff. And then I told him he could use the map. So he was real happy we did that. So I think, you know, it's very useful, very user-friendly, and you can find out exactly where to play. And not even just Florida. I mean, Scott's worked really hard on that, and you could pretty much go to any state now and click on the link, and it'll show you the list of all the poker options and their websites and even maps of where they are and where they're located. So really good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely use the help of the Antiup Nation, because as of right now, I'm fairly confident that there are links to every legitimate poker room in the United States.
It's crazy.
On that page. I mean, obviously, every state's got some different weird things going on, so I'm not saying that. But, you know, check it out. Let me know where I missed something. Let me know, because we like to keep it up to date as much as possible.
Very cool.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer, better known as the Fossil Man, and you are listening to Annie Up.
Let's play Raz.
All right, a Raz hit.
Heads up, Raz.
Oh, jeez.
See, you gotta be like, woo, Raz. And then I said, heads up, Raz. And I'm like, ugh.
I literally just heard 10,000 people throw their iPods across the room, or turn them off, one or the other. I don't know if I could even get through a heads up, Raz hand. Oh my god.
Oh man.
Well, where do you go for reference for this? Oh, you know what I mean. That's what I'm telling you, that shorthanded book, man. Do a shorthanded super system, and it'll fly off the shelves. I'm telling you. Heads up, Raz. Oh, my God. All right, best of luck to me. Let's go.
Well, it comes from our longtime listener, Michael Myers, of course, you know, from the movies.
Yeah. Do-do-do-do-do. He's from California, right? I think Mike Myers.
California. Yeah. Yep. In fact, actually, Mill Valley, California. Ooh. I don't know where that is yet.
That's where BJ's from on MASH.
Really?
Mm-hmm. All
right, does that help me figure out where?
It's near San Francisco, I think.
You're just Cliff Clavinging me here?
Yeah.
Not actually contributing to my knowledge, you're just letting me know what you know?
I'm not even sure. I think he's from San Francisco area, BJ, and I think he mentions Mill Valley on the show.
So maybe
I'm wrong. It doesn't seem like there's a valley near a bridge, but I don't know. Maybe there is.
All right, but anyhow, he sends his hand in and he says, seriously, Chris? Actually, it's not Chris. I say Chris. Seriously, what are the three most hated words in the English language? Heads up, Raz. Very hard to disagree with that.
Oh, man.
And he says we asked for a Raz hand, so here we go. Now, did we poke the beehive with a stick here?
Maybe.
I don't remember doing that.
I don't know if we asked for Raz hands. I know we asked for hands. maybe we asked for Raz hands. I don't know. Maybe you were in one of your drunken stupors, as you often are. I don't know.
All right, here's the scenario. So shortly after Black Friday, a poker friend of his sent out an email saying a bunch of us should play on the PokerStars home game area for play money, just to keep our poker chops up.
Yeah.
And he only wanted people to play if they would take it very seriously, as if it were real money, because the purpose was to learn to keep our brains working.
Right.
All right? This is a friend that you want to keep for life. This is a friend that's thinking a little bit. All right, he said this sounded great to him. Unfortunately, it didn't sound so great to most of the people invited. So there I was playing an 8-game heads up with my friend. All right, so, you know, I'm going to do a little revisionist history. He says, what are the three most hated words in the English language? Heads up, Raz. I'm going to say it's heads up, 8-game mix.
Yeah, but at least you could end it all when you get to No Limit Hold'em or Pot Limit Omaha. You know?
That's true.
In Raz, you just can't end it. Yeah, you can try, but you can't.
It's a tedious tournament to be playing heads up with someone. I've done it before, but... All right. Catch it back where I was. Wow, I got excited there. So he says this is obviously from the Raz rotation, and he's changed his login name to Villain to protect the innocent. I always like how people are their own judge and jury.
Sounds like he's worried somebody's going to track him down on PokerStar someday when PokerStar finally comes back in the United States, which is probably never going to happen. But whatever, Mike. Just don't worry about it.
All right, so our hero has 1,049 in chips.
Okay.
The newly named Villain has 2,162 in chips.
Okay.
And they both post the $2 ante.
Oh, my God.
Right? Oh. Oh, man. Yes, we are at the 40-80 level right now.
All right.
All right. That's a little bit of play. All right, so our hero is dealt the Deuce of Clubs, Ace of Diamonds, King of Diamonds is the up card.
Okay.
Beautiful. You're always looking for that in Raz. And the Villain is showing the Nine of Clubs. We obviously bring in for six. The Villain obviously raises to 34, raises 34 to 40. What do we do?
Oh, I'm calling. It's heads up Raz, and I'm perfect in the hole. I would do this in a cash game. I would do this at a full table, maybe. I'm calling. I don't know if I'm raising, but I'm definitely tracking him down. And I'm actually typing into the chat, I'm going to chase you down with his hand.
You know, this is the great thing about Raz, is because you could say stuff like that, because you're not being dishonest. You're like, hey, I've got a king, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to catch up to you to at least 6th Street unless you pair up. So I'm not giving you any information you don't know. Having fun with you.
Well, if he hits a king, he caught him.
Well, okay.
But yeah, I know what you're saying. Fine. So, yeah, I'm definitely calling there. With that much money in my stack, playing heads up, and he could have anything, he'd just be completing with a nine, I'm definitely calling.
Okay, let me ask you this. Do you ever consider raising here? As crazy as that sounds?
I don't know. I mean, you could just to... I don't know, to build a pot because you think you're going to outdraw this guy by the end, but no, I think I just call. I really don't see any benefit to raising. If the guy, if he has, you know, 4, 5, 9, he's going to pop it again, and now you're committing all these extra bets behind, so no.
Well, I mean, you're right. I would probably just call, obviously, but I think it's worth talking about because you're right. I mean, he's exactly right. It's an automatic raise for a Villain here, right?
Yeah.
You're insane not to raise here the Villain, even if you have two nines underneath.
Right.
You know, because he's got a king and he should fold, generally. Obviously, his heads up, so it's a little tougher. So I think the only thing you'd gain out of raising is let him know, hey, I'm pretty strong underneath, and if you're just automatically raising like you should and you're pretty brutal underneath, you might have to go a little cautiously. It might slow down the action a little bit, too. Maybe. Depending on your player. You have to know your player.
Yeah, I think the call is fine, and you just have to be careful what you get on 4th Street when you call, because if it seems more normally you're going to get someone calling with a king, they're going to have ace-deuce in the hole, or ace-three, or something like that. So if you get, like, an ace or a deuce on 4th Street, it's going to be harder to sell that you haven't paired. So just be careful what you get on 4th Street.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, our hero does make the call, because this would be a really boring hand of the week. Even double boring for heads-up Raz if he ended right here. And 4th Street, we get the 4 of clubs, and our Villain gets the queen of spades, so he's... sorry. See, now Fasso's already screaming at me because I'm
doing
saying
the suits. Yeah.
All right, so our Villain has queen 9 up, and we have king 4 up and ace deuce in the hole.
So he actually has to go first because he still has the lower hand.
That is correct, because we have a king showing.
All right, so what do they do?
Now, our hero says this is exactly what I was hoping for when I decided to call and peel one. My thought is that my chances are neither my king nor his queen is likely to play, so I view this as me taking the lead. I plan to raise if he bets, and he does bet. Hmm. What do you think about the thinking there?
Well, I think it's interesting. I think he's probably right that the king isn't going to play, and the queen isn't going to play, so he probably is in the lead now. So that's a healthy way to look at it, and I think I would raise. I think I would say... you know, there's a part in Super System where when you get the Fist Street, he explains that even a, you know, a Maid 9 versus Ace King, Ace Deuce Tray 4 King, the Ace, that hand's still a favorite now, or something like that. You can look it up yourself. I'm not, I didn't know I was going to have a Raz hand today. I can't look it up while we're talking. But so I think that's a healthy way of looking at it, and I'd have no problem raising here. Not that I would. I might wait a street to the bet's double, and I know exactly where I am on Fifth Street, but he's right. I mean, the odds of the queen playing and the king playing are pretty rare. You got three more cards to come. That's not to say that they wouldn't play. It's not to say you're not going to pair and then whatever.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But he's right. The king probably isn't going to play when it all is said and done. So I like the raise. It's aggressive. He could have paired that. You know, he could have had a nine. He could have had a queen in the hole, and now he's paired it. You could see that you're for real. You know, when you raise, if he was bluffing, he's probably going to fold. So I like the raise. It gives you a little information, too.
Yeah, and I think this is probably the more responsible way of playing it that I was mentioning on Third Street. You know, hey, yeah. If he's got a bunch of crap and you raise, then he's going to fold. Now you can sell that a little bit better because you're right. You got a four now. It's probably unlikely that it paired you. And he's got a queen now. So if he's, you know, if he was really bad, he's certainly not going to continue playing, you know, unless he's just a glutton for punishment here. Yeah. So this is a good time. This is the time to raise, I think.
Yeah, and plus, too, it's cheaper to raise now than it is on the next street when it costs you
absolutely.
More.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Why not raise now and see what happens on after that? So I like that idea. Yeah, I like that idea a lot.
Well, you can tell our heroes listen to our show a long time because that's exactly what he does, Chris.
Of course, he told us he was going to do that already, too. So,
and then he gets repopped.
Oh, he does get repopped. So the guy clearly doesn't have a pair. So we are behind, but statistically we're probably 50-50.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to call the repop.
All right. We're going to give up the ruse here for now and just play a little cautiously, correct?
Yeah. Well, now we know for sure that the guy is unpaired to the queen. And we have to beat his queen so far. So I'm going to call.
Yeah, to me, this is one of those. You don't get a lot of easy choices in poker, but I think this is one of them here. You know, you're not going to fold here, obviously. You've got three to a perfect. And raising really isn't going to accomplish anything here.
Right.
You know, you're not going to get him a fold. Now, hey, you think I'll make a move on you? And you made a move? Now I'm going to make a move back on you. it's just not going to happen. So I don't see any good argument for doing anything but just calling here and seeing what history brings.
Right, and think about it this way, too, and not that you can't do this, but let's imagine if you had ace-deuce-four to start and then you hit the king. Would you fold? No.
Yep.
So obviously you're going to play this four and you're going to play it aggressively, and now that you've gotten your information from him that you wanted, you call and then see what happens on fifth.
All right, well, our hero raises.
Ooh.
Caps the bet.
Well, I'm not saying that's a great idea, because you're still behind and you still don't have a hand yet. But I can see why he's doing it. I think he's betting on the come, like when you have the nut draw in Omaha and you're going to bet it on the flop. But of course, with me on the ship, it never happened and kept pairing up. But I see why he's doing that. I would rather just call here. I've got the information I need. I don't need to build a big pot. You know, it's going to be big enough anyway because there's three more streets. So.
All right. Well, I've already explained why I don't think you should raise here. But I mean, here's the biggest reason for me not to raise here. Remember the chip stacks.
Yeah.
When we started the hand, our hero had 1,049 in chips.
Yeah.
So now by capping it, I mean, obviously he already has 80 in, but now capping it, he's got more than 10% of his stack in right now.
Yeah.
On the come, and I don't think I want to be that aggressive on the come when my chip stack is low. You know, it's not like No Limit Hold'em where you have fold equity, you push it all in, and you might get somebody to fold. Here, I mean, it's limit. I would rather, you know, it's Raz. You're going to have times where you're going to catch up. I would rather just take one more card here, save the extra 40, and, you know, if I brick and he goes low, then I have options. Now, I mean, capping it now, I'm not saying you're committing yourself, but you put a lot of in here. I mean, obviously, your thinking is you're going to take this to the end. I hate to get all the way to the end because it's going to get more expensive in the next couple streets.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of shoving on a flush draw almost, and you're hoping you're going to hit on the next card.
Yeah.
You know, and you only have three cards left to make two cards better. You know, two of the next three have to hit you sweet to make your hand. So, you know, I don't like capping it. I'm not saying it's the worst move ever, but I've got my information. I know what the other guy has now, essentially. Why put more money at risk when I know that I'm behind, and I know I still have to hit two out of three to make a decent hand to take this pot down. So I'm just calling.
All right. Well, the villain he gets frisky in the chat box now, Chris. And I always like this in Raz.
Okay.
People that talk. Villain says, "Raz Spaz, nice. I don't have a pair. GL." And then call.
You gotta love the comments that come from Raz. You really do. It's just you can just so relate to him. It's hilarious.
All right, so we're Cap going to the Fifth Street. We get the eight. We get an eight.
Yeah.
Our opponent gets a deuce. All right, so we're showing a king 4-8. Villain showing a 9, queen deuce, and we have, of course, the ace deuce underneath. So we improve, obviously.
It's really good for us.
And we don't know whether he does or not. Very well could, or he could pair.
Yeah, and it doesn't even really matter now, because a 3, 5, 6, 7 ultimately will give us what's going to probably be a winning hand, unless he goes perfect out. He's going to have to make a 9 here. So I like 12 outs twice here for one bet, so I'll let him bet and call, and if he checks, I might bet, but the likelihood of that deuce pairing him, since we have a deuce in our hand, is not as likely. So I think he still has 5 unpaired cards. So I think I would just check call. I'll call a bet and then check if he checks.
Yeah, and I think our hand is significantly different on Fifth Street than it was on Fourth Street.
Yeah.
You know, we got another low card here, and we got 2 more to go, so I feel more comfortable. You know, if that would have came a queen or a 10 or something, then it gets a lot more difficult. All right, well, our hero says he's still happy here. His 8 is better than his 9, and he's still counting the king and still counting out the king and queen. Thoughts?
Oh, the other thing, too, is it's 16 outs. I was thinking 3 cards, but it's 6 cards. I mean, it's 4 cards that can make his 8, so that's 16 cards that can make his hand twice. That's just, I have no problem with, you know, with taking this to the end now, no matter what he does. I mean, I'm not going to obviously be aggressive because I don't have a hand yet, but, you know, 4 cards, you know, or 4 numbers, 4 ranks twice is 16 cards twice. So that's huge to me.
All right, well, we'll see how huge it is as the action goes. Our villain bets, we raise, we get re-raised, and we cap it.
All right, so clearly this guy's made his queen, and we're hoping that we're still a favorite somehow with 2 cards, which we probably are. 16 cards twice to make an 8 could happen. So what's going to happen is he's going to make a 9. How much you want to bet he's going to make a 9?
Yeah, all right, so again, I go back to this, and you know, I make no apologies for being a conservative player, but you know, or a short stack ninja, but I really do pay attention to my chip stack, and you know, I'm not opposed to the fact that we might be the favorite and getting the money in. It's just Raz, you know, I always mention this when we do our Raz classes. In Hold'em, when you get dealt pocket aces preflop, at the end of the hand, you are at least going to have pocket aces.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
In Raz, your hand can continually get worse.
Yes.
You start ace, deuce, tray, which is the best starting hand in Raz, and it may be crap at the end.
Yeah.
It may not have nothing. You know, you could go quads, 4 kings.
Yeah.
So I guess I have a lot of trouble when I'm a short stack, just ramming and jamming when I don't have any confidence that I'm going to get there or that I could win. I don't see any reason right now with this particular hand. And remember, it's heads up, so we're going to be playing this all night, probably all week. You know, for me to get all this money in right now, unless I have the best of it, because I'm going to get the best of it at some point. You know, just the law of averages, I'm going to have a hand where I don't have a king to start with, and I can be a lot more aggressive with that hand.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. I understand that you're probably statistically a favorite, but that doesn't mean you need to pump the pot with money. You know what I mean? You're playing a limit game, so reap the benefits of it being a limit game and just call, you know, and save yourself some money. It's a big enough pot now that even if you don't put any more in it and you win it, it's still a decent pot, and you're going to be playing this forever, like you said. And then after Raz, it's stud and stud eight, right? Is that how it goes in the 8K mix?
Boy, it's been a while. Poker Stars,
I know.
Miss you so much.
I miss it so much. But I think that's what it is. At least it's the stud variations, I think. So you're going to be playing this a while.
Yeah, a couple more things here, though. I mean, we already have a significant portion of our stack in the pot as it is. And it's going to be really tough for us to fold this hand, you know, regardless of what comes. So we're probably going to put in at least another 320.
Yeah.
In the end, I don't see any reason, or I'm sorry, another 160.
160.
I just don't see any upside. Not any upside. I don't see a big enough upside to getting it all in here. I mean, just let them bet and then call and then reassess on the 60.
Yeah, I agree. So I don't agree with the raising. I would have just called.
Okay. Well, of course, we got it capped. Sixth Street brings us a jack and brings our villain a 10. So, of course, he's showing 9, queen, deuce, 10 now. We're showing king, 4, 8, jack with our ace, deuce underneath. And this is exactly what I'm talking about, Chris.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you know, if this came a 3, everybody would be like, ho-ho, say, Scott, you lost a lot of money. But no, this is why. I mean, I'm not so much worried about the money I would won by getting my tray and bumping it ahead of time. I'm worried about the money I'm going to lose now if I brick out the rest of the way.
Yeah. Think about the capping that he did on the last street. If he had just called, he could use those two bets for the turn in the river and still get there for the same price without losing more money.
And infinitely different if it's a cash game.
Yeah, yeah.
Cash game, fine. You know, you can raise and cap all day and take more money out the next hand. But a tournament, when you're out of the tournament, you're out of the tournament.
Yep. Yeah. And so, all right, so let's think about the hand now. So the guy's got probably a made 10 now. Probably.
One would think so, right? Absolutely.
Yeah. So if he bricks on the river, then you have more outs.
Yeah.
But we have more outs to hit. If
that's true.
You know, you can add three nines to it and maybe even a 10, but I doubt, a 10-8 might be good if he makes 10-9. So
10 could.
Could
yeah.
be. So you literally may have 7 more outs. So you could have like 11 outs on the river. So I don't like betting it aggressively. Maybe he has a queen and maybe you actually have him. You know, maybe he did pair one of those cards. Maybe the 10 paired him or something and he still has a queen. But I'm not going to go crazy here. Obviously, all I have is a jack, and he could easily have us beat, and he's shown aggression the whole way, so you know he's got, at worst, a made queen, and he probably has a 10, so let's just check call again.
Yeah, I mean, you just figured what 11. I mean, we have a better chance of missing on 7th than hitting, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so here's the thing. The villain checks, which I think is a gift from the poker gods.
Yeah.
I don't see any reason why this guy would check here. There's just, you know, other than the fact that we keep going crazy, so...
Or unless he's convinced that that Mike knows he has a queen, you know what I mean, and that the jack is now ahead of the queen because a 10 paired him or something.
Well, that's true, too.
That's the only thing, reason why I think he checks there.
Yeah.
Save money.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to bet. I'm going to be like, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying, right? You know, we're not. This is not a puffy chest day here. You know, hey, all right, check. I'm going to show you what I can do. I can bet. No, hey, thanks. Give me a free shot to beat you. That's great. I'll take it. I'll take it all day.
Yeah, pot's big enough that you don't need to put more money in it. You know,
absolutely.
I'm not
absolutely.
Saying that you should always put money in it, but it's big enough. Let's get there and celebrate it, and then get the bet in.
Yeah. All right. Well, he checks, and we bet.
Well, again,
acknowledging, hey, here's the problem. I'm now definitely behind. Should I have been more cautious? And of course, I think everybody knows my answer. But he bets.
Well, again, I think that the only way I bet there is if I'm convinced the 10 paired him, and I don't know how I could be convinced of that. But the check might tell me that. The check might say, you know what? I just paired my 10. He actually could be ahead. Let's check call and hope we hit on the river. That's the villain talking. So maybe. Maybe that's why, but even a bet is going to get him to fold for one more bet, so why bet?
Yeah. All right, here's the seminal question that Mike asks. But he checks, so I bet. I think this might be a mistake, but why would he check here? And here is the answer, folks, because the villain raises us now.
Oh, jeez. See that? It's what you get for betting.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the things that you... I mean, it's good that you're using critical skills. All right, wait a minute. All right, I just got a jack here. He just got a 10. There's no reason that he would check. Why would he check? Since he checks, he must be weak. Well, no. The reason he would check is that you've been capping it all the way, so he knows you're probably going to put a bet in here, and he has to think that he's best now, so now he just squeezed one more bet out of you.
Yeah, because statistically, obviously, you're behind, and from what we can see on the board, he has you board locked if he has his 10 made.
Yep.
So, and if you're going to keep pulling your crap with betting, he's going to get an extra bet in on you now. So yeah, you're right. Every street here from the four on, I think the fifth street, fourth street on, I think he's really risked more bets than he needed to.
Yeah, and I do think this is a little bit of a risk for our villain here to check here. As we said, it was a gift for us that he checked. We should check behind. But I think he's playing the person here. He knows this guy's been racing him.
Yeah.
Gabbing all the way in. So it's probably a mitigated risk here that you're just going to check behind. He's assuming you're a good call, and then bam, another bet in there. Woo! All right, so he raises, and I guess the good thing is we just call. We don't continue to cap here. At which point we'd have to add Mike on our California trip roster next week just so we can punch him in the face.
Oh, man.
All right, the river, we are dealt Trey.
Yay, we can't lose.
And that's what he said. Bingo, can't lose. So see, all this all worked out.
Yeah.
This time.
Oh, my God. Well, the beauty is that he doesn't have to act first either, so you know he's going to get a bet in.
Yep. All right, well, the villain does check. Obviously, we're going to bet, and the villain did call, and obviously we're going to win here.
I say the villain probably shows a 10, but maybe a 9, but probably a 10-9.
All right, he shows 5 clubs. I'm sorry, 5, 4, 9, queen, deuce, 10-10.
10-10. So he made a 10.
Yep.
So he had the 10. And now it's interesting because I don't know the order. Did the 10?
I asked Mike about this because I couldn't remember. I know some sites scramble your whole cards. And at least from Mike's, Mike tells me that PokerStars does not scramble.
Okay.
So we were led to believe that he started with a pretty darn good hand, 5-4-9.
Yeah.
And then had a made queen, and then just got unlucky to river by pairing up, and then we got the gin card we needed.
Man, that's crazy.
So then you wanted to ask how we see his hand from the villain's perspective, and I really see nothing wrong with how the villain played this.
No, I really don't, because he betted accordingly and was exactly telling you exactly what we said he was telling you, is that he did have a made queen that he improved to a 10. But the check was the check raise, so it wasn't a pair of 10. And the 10 in the end was why you check called, knowing that you could catch to beat him. And so I don't see any way he played it any differently. I mean, he probably didn't have to cap it. He could have saved some money knowing that you were drawing to a better hand than him. But other than that, really, he played it pretty
well.
There's
probably a case to be made there. But yeah. But again, I mean, we were short stacked in this, too. I mean, the little art of war thing, too, is, keep that pressure on. You know, I'm not going to. I'm much more conservative with my bets when I'm the short stack and I could be eliminated. I'm more willing to use those that billy club to my advantage when I can deliver a knockout punch.
Yeah.
And we were pretty close to being a knockout punch there, I think. I mean, I didn't look at the actual the final pot there, but 15-24. So we put 700 in. We were down to about 300 if we would have lost that hand.
Jeez. Yeah, betting on the come is a scary thing, you know.
And talk about coming back from 300 down, from 300, would it be 28 to 300 or so, roughly,
man.
In a limit game?
Limit game. And at low, it was only 40-80 at the point, too, so that's a huge, huge pot.
That would be brutal to kind of come back from that.
Man. Wow, Raz hand. We actually got through it and actually made some sense out of it. That's pretty good.
All right, Mike, you know the drill. We've sent you some swag before. But everybody else, remember to email your hands the week to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And we'll be happy to send you something wonderful like a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net.
And we should have got some money from, the Florida Convention Bureau or something, or the visitors or whatever, for this show. But really, Florida's a great, great place to come play, and if you do, look us up. I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@anyupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.